Good afternoon, everyone. I am Hank Jones, and you are listening to Hank Jones Poly Sports here at Global Patriot Radio. You can be found every day at blogtalkradio.com, every day. In fact, that starts with Monday, 6 p.m. Eastern, the Vito Esposito Show, featuring Big Al and, of course, Vito, every Monday at 6 o'clock. Tuesdays at 6 p.m. Eastern, Eric is in with the Cross and Crescent discussion. Then, of course, Wednesdays at 5:30, me, Hank Jones with Hank Jones Poly Sports. Thursdays at 6 p.m. Eastern, Paul Sutliff with the Sutliffian Report. Fridays at noon, usually, Andrew Herod with Conservative Casual Friday. Saturday nights at 10 p.m. until midnight, Minister Usama Dakduk and the Beautiful Christie with Revealing the Truth About Islam. And then Sundays, 3 p.m. Eastern, Eric returns with a continuation of the Cross and Crescent discussion, although it was formerly known as Real Interfaith Dialogue, and it still may be known as that, but it's basically a continuation of the Cross and Crescent discussion. I am here in Electric Hank Land, just hanging out, of course, live. There's a lot going on, but not a lot at the same time. You know, it's kind of the old thing. If you want to interact with the show live, of course, you can come into the chat room or just listen online, blogtalkradio.com, and find us. Or if you want to email me anytime, hjpsports1980@gmail.com. If you go to Facebook, just go in your search bar, type in Hank Jones Polysports, Polysports being one word and with an I, not a Y. It's not Poly the parrot. Just type that in and it'll take you to my page, or go to Twitter. Just go at HPolysports all together and you'll tweet directly at me, as others have done. Got a lot going on today. We're going to have a good discussion kind of up around 6 o'clock. So let's get to the other stuff. Let's get to our obits. Last Wednesday, we lost food writer and food blogger Julie Powell to cardiac arrest at age 49. She was the Julie in the film Julie and Julia with Meryl Streep. Chronicled her efforts to make all the recipes in one of Julia Child's early cookbooks. Sort of split time between her and Julia Child's early life as a chef. Many are attributing it to the COVID-19 vaccine. Who knows? It's not like they would tell us if that's the case. I mean, it would have to be a family member that would say something. It's not going to be her doctor. It's not going to be the coroner or the health department or anything like that. Damn sure it's not going to be them. Friday. Three pretty notable losses. First, we lost drummer D.H. Pellegrino of the Dead Kennedys. He also had a stint with the Red Hot Chili Peppers. Result of head trauma from an accidental fall. Then we also lost early rocker and pedophile Jerry Lee Lewis at age 87. And yes, this time he's really dead. Seems a few media outlets jumped the gun and reported it while he was still kicking. He was best known for the song Great Balls of Fire. And for marrying his cousin, or his 13-year-old cousin once removed. Yeah, he's also related to Mickey Gilley and Jimmy Swaggart. Yeah, they're a real sad loss. Legendary Georgia Bulldog football coach Vince Dooley passed away at the age of 90. Now, he had suffered from COVID about a month before his tests, or his death, but had not been positive for several weeks. But he, of course, won the national championship in 1980. That was the freshman year of Herschel Walker, a candidate for the Senate, by the way, in Georgia. Many said Walker should have won the Heisman that year. I don't know. Hugh Greene was really the one that probably should have, although George Rogers from South Carolina took it home. And no problem with him winning it either. The weekend was relatively quiet, but we had a couple notable losses on Monday, which also happened to be Halloween. We lost former assistant football coach Adam Zimmer, the son of former Vikings head coach Mike Zimmer. He was 38, no known cause yet. Then we also lost former NASCAR driver Mike Potter at age 73, also no cause listed. And then finally we lost actor Andrew Duncan. He appeared in the films Love Story, The Hospital, and Used Cars. He was 72. Yesterday, we lost rapper Takeoff, from the group Migos. He was shot and killed in Houston. He was aged 28. He was raised alongside his family members who became his bandmates, Quavo and Offset. Offset is married to Cardi B. There may have been some friction over Quavo's former girlfriend, known professionally as Saweetie, and the fact that she possibly slept with Offset, who, as I mentioned earlier, is married to Cardi B. They have two kids. They are two of the five kids that Offset has fathered, with Cardi B being one of four baby mamas. Yeah, this probably wasn't a case of mistaken identity. Probably not. We also lost former football player and coach John McVay at age 91. He had coaching stops at Michigan State and Dayton on the college level. He was a head coach of the New York Giants from 1976 to 78. And finally, Tuesday, we lost former Kenyan Olympic middle distance runner Wilson Kipruget. He was 84. He won medals in the 800 meters at both the Tokyo and Mexico City Olympiads. Won bronze in Tokyo in 64 and silver in Mexico City in 68. He was actually the first person from Kenya to ever win Olympic medal. Now, right after he did, several others in 1968, Kip Keno, among others. And then finally, we lost former New York Times restaurant critic Gail Green at age 88. She spent over 40 years there. She was noted for her brutal honesty and sometimes sexual innuendo in her reviews. Not sure why, because she was never very sexy. She later became a celebrity judge on the reality cooking competition circuit. You know, it's like being a judge on those shows with, like, Gordon Ramsay and whatever. Yeah. So that's pretty much it for the obits. Don't forget my friends at Alliance Communications, Central Florida's 24-hour call center at messaging and answering service for your hospital clinic, your office clinic, your survey, your service companies, gathering information, all that kind of stuff. Don't forget they work with remote staff as well. So if you're one who specializes or thrives working in a remote staffing environment, give them a call as well. You can reach them at 800-555-3738, or you can visit them online, alliancecommunications.com. Here's our first Laffy from the Babylon Bee. It's actually an article. Seven ways drag shows are actually good for kids. I know. Number one, nothing on Halloween will remotely scare them anymore. Your kids will no longer run away and cry at that Jason costume after witnessing Priscilla Torxel in full makeup. Number two, they'll definitely believe in the depravity, and it's never too early to teach them sound theology. Number three, it's an easy spot for cops to round up pedophiles. Obviously, that's an obvious one. Number four, they'll have plenty to talk about later in therapy. Number five, you can use it as a threat to keep them in line. Just the usual, if you sass me one more time, you're off to the drag show. Number six, being exposed to monkeypox at a young age helps develop natural immunity. And the seventh reason that drag shows are actually good for kids, since little kids are normally rebels, they'll end up rebelling against their insane groomer parents and become conservative traditionalists. Babylon Bee rarely, if ever, disappoints. On occasion, but you know. Some quickies this week. Robbie Starbuck on Twitter noted that Biden and La Dopey Nostra worked with a group called Election Integrity Project to censor Dopey Joe opponents. Starbuck, who actually made the list of opponents, was actually censored while running for Congress. According to him, certain groups, including the NAACP, Department of Homeland Security, the State Department, and Common Cause, would file tickets, posts, or people they wanted censored. EIP then did the wet work, that's mob slang for hits, by going to the various big tech and big media outlets. Yeah, you can find that story. Just look it up, Robbie Starbuck. Today, the Fed announced another interest rate hike of 75 basis points. A first, no, not the hike, but like the fourth one inside a year. Reports are out now saying that the U.S. has boots on the ground in Ukraine. I say reports because it's not really clear. If so, though, we could all be in trouble. Now, finally, Dopey Joe is giving an unscheduled speech tonight from D.C.'s Union Station on, quote, threats to democracy today. Apparently, it will highlight the attack on Paul Pelosi. I'll tell you what we need. We need an unscheduled cognitive test. I mean, we can still give him ice cream afterward. You know what I mean? Like how you used to get a lolly after you got a shot at the doctor when you were a kid. We can still give him ice cream, just unscheduled. That's needed. Okay, let's start off with this. Here's a list, at least a partial list, of those celebrity types who have left Twitter since the Elon Musk acquisition became reality. Shonda Rhimes, creator of Grey's Anatomy. I don't know who she is. I don't know, watch the show. I never have, never will. I don't care. Up next, Sarah Bareilles, singer-songwriter. I know the name, not the music. Again, don't care. Toni Braxton, singer, family reality show person. I know who she is. I know she's talented, but I'm not a fan of hers. I don't care that she's left Twitter. Mick Foley. Yes, Mick Foley, masquerades as a wrestler. He's really best known for wearing a sock on his hand and talking to it, claiming that it talked to him. And I think he named the sock, if I remember. As legendary Ric Flair, Nature Boy Ric Flair, once said, Mick Foley's not really a wrestler. He's more of a glorified stuntman. So, yeah, don't care. Brian Koppelman. Who the hell is that? Obviously don't care. Eric Larson. As I said with Brian Koppelman. Who the hell is that? Don't care. Tia Leone has left Twitter. The very definition of has been. Alex Winter. Wait a second. Did Edgar and Johnny Winter have a third brother that we never heard about? Sort of like Livingston Taylor? Never heard of Livingston Taylor? He's James Taylor's brother, believe it or not. He had a semi-hit song. Oh, by the way, when he said, he sounded just like James Taylor, which is probably why he thought it was James Taylor doing the song. Obviously didn't know there was a Livingston Taylor. Obviously don't care in this case. Starting to see a pattern here. I really don't care. Now, Ken Olin. Washed-up actor, producer, director. He had gave some sort of heartfelt farewell message, which for some reason got into my timeline. So I answered. I actually did. I said, may the door not hit you square in your bony ass. So I guess you could say I almost care, since I think I would have enjoyed on occasion taking this jackwagon down a few pegs every week. So, yeah, I guess I sort of care in this case. Here's his message. And tell me the dude didn't tee it up for some daily bitch slapping. Here's what he said. Hey, all, I'm out of here. No judgment. Let's keep the faith. Let's protect our democracy. Let's try to be kinder. Let's try to save the planet. Let's try to be more generous. Let's look to find peace in the world. So, yeah, I'm going to take this one line by line. Hey, all. What? He didn't say, dear loyal Twitterati or loyal followers or to my fans. I'm out of here. No judgment. Why announce it? In other words, no judgment is obviously a lie. Let's keep the faith. Faith in what? What kind of faith is required to use and stay on? By the way, judging by the content on most of Twitter, not a hell of a lot. Let's protect our democracy. Ken, don't you mean republic? And given your ilk and its tendency to tear down all constructs of said republic, why feign an interest in protecting democracy? If you were that interested, wouldn't you actually look at the arguments put forth regarding the 2020 election fraud as well as the January 6th hostages? I love this one. Let's try to be kinder. Yeah, boy, nothing says kind like a pallet of bricks dropped off in front of Macy's or Target during the plandemic and the George Floyd-related unrest. This one, love this one. Let's try to save the planet. Save the planet from what exactly? Or who? No actual scientific evidence shows our planet to be in any danger from anything man does, short of war. Which makes you wonder, is he expecting or advocating war? But he says, let's try to be more generous. How about, let's try not to be sanctimonious, and let's not pretend Twitter is a world focused on the concept of generosity. And then this one, let's look to find peace in the world. That one's actually pretty easy. Free the January 6th hostages. Investigate the election fraud. Stop allowing big media to be the lapdog that allows big left to try and control the narrative infrastructure. That's how you might find peace in the world. This actually brings me to a point I made earlier when I mentioned Ken Olin making it into my timeline. A lot of people have been talking about this lately. Another person, though, whose tweets made my timeline and who I had to actually block because he hadn't yet kept his promise to leave Twitter, by the way, was Rob Reiner, a.k.a. Meathead. Yeah, we conservatives didn't fail to notice it. How in Billy Blue Blazes were all these people with whom I share no connection, be it philosophically, economically, vocationally, or otherwise, how are all these people making it into the timelines of people like myself and other conservatives? I'll tell you, one astute observer posed this question. Do you think liberals have conservatives popping up on their timelines randomly? The answer was a resounding no. So yeah, it goes to show, liberalism and leftism isn't about tolerance or openness, or patriotism. It's about elitism, control, and division. Fact. Yesterday, Chief Justice John Roberts put a temporary hold on Congress via the IRS, getting President Trump's tax returns. Guess what? Good move. Literally, once Congress can weaponize the IRS and the other alphabet agencies the same way the executive branch does, we are through. Literally, we are through. The concept of checks and balances will finally be a sham, and none of us will have any meaningful rights. Think about it. Think about Congress willy-nilly using the ATF to take guns and ammo. Think about Congress using the Department of Energy markets, the auto industry, whatever. Think if they can go after a president unfettered, the rest of us are toast. I mean, we'll see how long it lasts, of course, and how long before Chief Justice Roberts is bamboozled by the radical wing of the court. But for now, at least we have a dose of sanity. So there's that. Paul Pelosi got hammered again. Yeah, the whole ruse of it being a deranged Trump supporter that broke into the Pelosi household while Vodka Nancy was gone and shouting for Vodka Nancy would normally hold up until you learned the guy was in his underwear. Oh, and Paul might have been in his underwear. And they both had hammers. And the window was possibly broken from the inside. Yes, local police are running interference like you wouldn't believe, and the sycophants on the left are doing the same. Well, let's look at it this way. Positive here. If I'm busted into Casa Pelosi looking for Vodka Nancy, I'd rather that I be the one wearing the skivvies and not her. So there is that. Steve Dace put it best, though, on a Facebook post. He said this, one of two things is true. One, the Pelosi home had ridiculously lax security for such a powerful political family, and they were cosmically victimized by their own open borders lunacy because of it. Or two, they're lying. It's one or the other. Okay, we got all that uncomfortable visual out of the way of me and my skivvies or Nancy and her skivvies. The number of Michigan State players suspended, two Michigan players after last Saturday's game between Michigan State and Michigan and Ann Arbor is now up to 8. And yes, Michigan State has always been a thug school and program, at least in my mind. But the fact Michigan has had tussles with opponents 2 weeks in a row is starting to sound a bit off to me. I mean, the previous week, Penn State played at the Big House. And again, there were evidently, or at least allegedly, some confrontations between Nittany Lion and Wolverine players in the tunnel. Now, that's odd, 2 weeks in a row. Odder still, though, is that a stadium that seats over 107,000 people has two teams sharing the same entry-exit tunnel. That's freaking bizarre. I mean, what the hell? I mean, can the folks up at UM not pony up a few extra bucks to give the team separate but equal access to the field? I mean, seriously, what in the hell? Anyway, given this has happened 2 weeks in a row in the Wolverines host stadium, makes me believe something more is definitely going on at that place. And I'm not sure if visiting players are being set up or baited or whatever, but seriously, the confrontations have got to stop. And it's the host school, it is the job of the University of Michigan to put a stop to it. Unless, of course, it's what head coach Jim Harbaugh and his own gang of thugs actually wants. Just a thought or two for me. Funny, you know, growing up, I always rooted for Michigan to win the annual game with Ohio State. Actually, it hasn't been that way for quite a while, though. First, I think Michigan is the worst example of of elitism in the Big Ten. Now, I know most will say Northwestern. That's really only because it's a private school and it's on Chicago's North Shore. But trust me, between students, faculty, coaches, et cetera, nobody else in the Big Ten got nothing on the folks in Ann Arbor when it comes to elitism. And second, Michigan, even during their down years, between roughly 2008 and 2014, they thought they were an elite football program, and they thought they were the elite program in the Big Ten. They still thought that. I'm not an OSU fan by a long shot, but if I have to root for one or the other to win the Big Ten and represent the league in the college football playoff, assuming it's not my Hawkeyes, I don't go with Ohio State. Yeah, this year when those two get it on in Columbus the Saturday after Thanksgiving, I will pull for Ohio State through clenched teeth. But anyway, okay, big sigh. And now for the nightmare side of the term poly sports. It looks like the NBA Phoenix Suns could be for sale. No problem, right? Except, guess who could be the face of the new ownership group? Another, and former President Barack Obama. I mean, you think you hate the NBA now? Give it a few months. You wouldn't recognize the league. Here's some commentary from the director of Jihad Watch, Robert Spencer, on this. It's actually really good, and it's really short. So, yes, we will have Mike and Indy Hawk on by 6. Robert Sarver, owner of the NBA's Phoenix Suns, has announced that he is selling the team. This comes, says the Daily Mail, after a league investigation into allegations that he engaged in racism, sexism, and bullying. Now a group has expressed interest in plunking down the $3 billion or so it will take to buy the team, and this is no ordinary group. It reportedly includes none other than Barack Obama. And really, what could be more fitting and better for the league's image than to have the sainted first black president take over the team after a disgraced, notorious racist had to give it up? It really could happen, although Obama would not pay the lion's share of this massive outlay. He would just be the public face of the franchise. Bill Simmons, on his The Ringer podcast via NBC Sports, says that the days of somebody being able to put in a little money and run the team, those days are over. The one guy who might pull it off, and I heard, I'm probably breaking some news here, but I heard Obama is involved in one of the groups. And that's the one guy who I feel like would make him the actual face. And the money guys would be so happy to have him in the front. Al Roberts says, or Robert Spencer says, of course they would. Nothing could reestablish the team's tarnished image better than the man who nobody dares to criticize for fear of charges of racism. NBA legend Charles Barkley was supposedly excited at the news and expressed interest in joining the group. He said, if Obama called me, hell yeah, I'm buying in. I got so much love and admiration for that guy. And really, who wouldn't? His two terms as president dug America into a deep hole, and now the Biden administration, to which many refer to as Obama's third term, is piling on the dirt. Who couldn't love the guy? Suns head coach Monty Williams was stoked as well. Anybody would value a partnership with someone like that. Of course. Then Williams continued, for me, as an African-American, even though you may have differences of opinions on certain views politically, whatever that looks like, someone that's been through those kinds of experiences from a leadership standpoint, I would love to just pick his brain and just sit and listen for hours about life and decisions and things like that. Yeah, who wouldn't want to sit and listen for hours to Barack Obama? Some might prefer a root canal without anesthesia, but to each his own. and just imagine the possibilities. As president, Barack Obama was hedged around in all sorts of ways. He was constrained theoretically by the Constitution, even more theoretically by Mitch McConnell, and by public opinion, even as the Democrats did all they could to manipulate it through the establishment media. He accomplished a great deal of his promised fundamental transformation of America, but the full dumpster fire effect was left to old Joe Biden and his henchmen. Nonetheless, with the Suns, he could really implement his full vision. The Phoenix Suns could become Obama's America in microcosm. They could be the first sports team to stop hiring on the basis of their ability to play the game. Instead, based on population percentages, the Phoenix starting five will consist of two white players rounding down to counteract, you know, the white privilege, two Hispanic players rounding a bit, and one black player. One player will be disabled and get around the court in a wheelchair. Two of the starting five and a leading reserve player will be female, or at least identify as such. Did I tell you this was good? Players found to have voted for Trump or any other Republican other than Mitt Romney, Liz Cheney, or Adam Kinzinger will be unconditionally released. Players reluctant to declare themselves transgender will be fined. Players will hold practice sessions during each one. CNN will be playing constantly at a loud volume so as to ensure that players are as ideologically informed as they are adept at basketball. They'd be required to donate 50% of their salaries to Antifa, Black Lives Matter, and other approved charities, no matter how it's spent. The Suns will become the model team for the new woke NBA, showing that woke sports are in every way superior to the bad old white supremacist variety in which two teams played a game and one of them won. The Obama Suns may not win many games, if any, but they'll win something that Barack Obama himself would affirm is much more important, the applause of the New York Times and the Washington Post. Did I tell you? Told you it was good. Some miscellaneous sports items before we take a quick break, and then I bring on Mike and Indy Hawk. Steve Nash is out as the head coach of the Brooklyn Nets after roughly a season plus, despite fending off Kevin Durant's demands to fire him over the summer. They started 2-6 this year, and Kyrie Irving got caught up in that tweeting of anti-Semitic crap, so it became easily. Here's the surprise. Boston Celtics head coach, who is suspended for the season, Ime Udoka, is one of the leaders to be the replacement, is probably going to be. That'll be a fun discussion between the teams. Kansas coach Bill Self, head basketball coach Bill Self, and assistant Curtis Townsend will serve 4-game suspensions as part of the FBI investigation into the school's corruption case with Adidas in 2017. In addition, former Jayhawk and New Mexico player Jethro Muscadine passed away Monday. Never recovered from injuries in a one-car crash from last December. Georgia All-American Nolan Smith, American linebacker Nolan Smith, will miss the rest of the season due to a pectoral tear. South Carolina wide receiver Corey Rucker, transferred in from Arkansas State, only made it onto the field for 2 games, will miss the rest of the season due to a nagging foot injury. And Nebraska quarterback Casey Thompson is day-to-day with an arm injury. Also in college football, Auburn has fired head coach Brian Harsin, who lasted all the season and a half. Good luck to the next War Eagle head coach. Finally, the college football playoff rankings are out. The first one, Tennessee's number one, followed by Ohio State, Georgia, and Clemson. So right now, Michigan is the outsider. That will most likely change next week, given that Tennessee heads to Athens, Georgia, this Saturday to play the Bulldogs. Michigan heads to Rutgers. Clemson heads to Notre Dame. For the record, I will never mention South Bend and Notre Dame in the same reference. If you don't know where Notre Dame is in South Bend, Indiana, wake the hell up. If you hear South Bend and you don't immediately think Notre Dame, I think maybe, ironically, you're to be commended. Ironically, in those rankings, number one loss Illinois. One loss Illinois is behind two loss LSU, two loss Utah, and two loss Kansas State. And then before our break, an internet laughy, another one from the Babylon Bee. This one's an instant classic. DHS announces they will suppress as much speech as it takes to preserve democracy. That is absolutely brilliant. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. Be back in about 2 minutes. It'll be Hawkeye Mike and Indy Hawk. We got a lot going on. We got some college football, and we got some election predictions coming up. So about 3 minutes more like. Be back at 3. We are back on Hank Jones Poly Sports. And somebody's got their radio right next to us. Andy Hawk, you on?
Yeah, I'm here. Hi, Hank.
Are you where you're I'm getting feedback from you?
I don't think so. There's nothing near me.
Okay. How about Mike? You there?
I'm here, Hank, and I'm here on the
Yeah, are you near your computer or something?
Yeah, but my computer's off.
Oh, we're getting feedback. That's weird.
That's weird.
Oh, well.
That has never happened before.
Before we get started, a Pennsylvania court has ruled ballots in undated envelopes will not count. I'm going to assume that means Democrat ballots, too. And also, in Israel,
exit polls from elections yesterday are pointing to a likely comeback
for Benjamin Netanyahu. Are both you guys hearing this?
Yeah, I am.
So, I mean, are you guys hearing the feedback, like the second... the second voice?
Now I'm not.
Yeah, it stopped.
It's gone now. Okay,
all
good.
Right. Yeah, the Department of Homeland Security is going to let us finish out. So, anyway.
That's what it was. It was a Democratic plot.
It was a Democratic plot, I'm telling you. Rob Reiner strikes you.
Starting already.
Yeah.
So, We got. We'll start with some political stuff. We'll start with any governor's races coming up next Tuesday. I'll start, Indy. I'll start with you. Are there any races you're thinking of that jump out? Anything locally to you, or any national Democrat or governor's races that have caught your attention?
Yeah, I'm going to be watching the Wisconsin one between Michaels and Evers. It's a, you know, get a Trump-backed Republican, and you know, Wisconsin. It's been a good red state for a few years, sometimes, but
yeah,
I think
north
that's
of
be
Madison,
a precursor.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Okay. Is there any others you watch, or is that the main one?
The Arizona one's interesting. The Carrie Lake, Katie Hobbs.
Yeah.
The Katie Hobbs refused to participate, I believe, in a debate, so they're trying to defend that. But,
so are you predicting either one of those?
I think it's going to be – Hawkeye Mike's got me talked into a red wave, so I'm going to lean red on both.
Okay. So that would be who in Wisconsin?
So that would be who in Wisconsin?
Michaels. Tim Michaels.
Okay, and then Carrie Lake.
Michaels was down by like 3 points a few months ago, and then he's closed that gap dramatically. So it's really tight, right? Yeah, it's one of the tight.
Okay, and Mike, how about you? Any
okay,
races
and
you're
Mike,
calling?
How about you? Any races you're calling?
Getting some feedback there.
Getting some feedback there again.
Yeah, it's the left.
It's the left.
I think Indy Hawk spot on. I checked on Wisconsin.
Recent polling has that Michael's wanted in Michigan, governor's race.
And do you think Whitmer's going to lose?
I think it's a real toss-up. But if that pans out, I think she's in big trouble. I think she'll lose. And also the Arizona race, Carrie Lake. She's had a consistent poll lead, so I think she's probably going to win. Question is, can she pull off Blake Masters across the finish line in the Senate race? And that's really close too. And the key thing there is Libertarian dropped out and endorsed Masters, and he was getting about 6% of the vote.
Yeah, I saw that.
He just dropped out about a week ago, so that should be a big plus.
I guess my races, I was following DeSantis and Crist in Florida as a Floridian. Crist has become a mess. His campaign manager quit about a week or so ago. Everything Crist said, calling himself Christ, alluding to himself as Christ, DeSantis as Satan, it's just been a mess.
And the way Governor DeSantis has handled Hurricane Ian has been masterful.
And then Georgia, Kemp Abrams, for a while it looked like Abrams was going to keep it close, but her gaps, whether she's spoken them or done stupid stuff, I think that's doomed it. So I'm going to pick DeSantis, obviously, and I'm going to pick Kemp as well.
Yeah, DeSantis and Kemp, I think are leaning pretty real core politics. I think they're leaning red on both of those, if I remember right.
Yeah, they definitely are.
Yep.
They definitely are.
So let's get to the CFP first rankings. Mike, have you looked at them? Any thoughts?
Well, I don't have a problem with Tennessee, Ohio State, and Georgia.
I'd like to hear why Clemson is ahead of Michigan.
Yeah,
because
I would agree.
They've had tougher,
agree.
Closer
they've
games.
They've had tougher,
Michigan
closer
has
games.
Looked really good.
Michigan has looked really good.
Yeah. Well, what signature
yeah, well,
wins, does Clemson
what
have?
Wins does Clemson have?
They beat Syracuse narrowly. They beat Florida State,
who's unranked by six.
Yeah, and by the way, Syracuse lost to Notre Dame
last
weekend.
They barely beat Wake Forest.
Yeah.
Yeah, they should have lost to Syracuse.
Yeah, Indy, you got any thoughts?
They got to play at Notre Dame Saturday, so hopefully Notre Dame pulls one off. But, yeah, that's the problem.
Oh,
come at that high. It seems like there's a lot of historical or whatever you want to call it. Because it's hard
yeah.
to explain just off the
yeah.
metrics.
I mean, up until this point, I was thinking Clemson is the quietest undefeated team this far into the season. But suddenly they make them number four.
So they make them number four.
I think I'm more surprised that one-loss Illinois is behind four two-loss teams.
Illinois is getting no respect. Exactly. It's just Tommy.
Okay, so let's go to house races. Mike, give us a couple house races
that we need to be watching.
Colorado gained a seat through reapportionment. And it was a toss-up seat
designed to be pretty equally between Democrats and Republicans.
And right now it's looking like Republicans going to win.
The RCP average has at least Republican. I think it's right.
And that's kind of a microcosm of what's going to happen next Tuesday. There's just a whole slew of seats, and almost all the Democrats leaning ones are showing Republicans ahead. Which is interesting because all of a sudden they're shifting. And there was an article today in the New York Times that they're not confident in their recent polls. They had Democrats in Senate races, but I think they are not confident at all. And they shouldn't be.
Okay, Andy, anything you're listening to
or watching?
Well, there's a race in New Hampshire with Chris Pappas, a Democrat, and Carolyn Leavitt. She's a 25-year-old graduate, college graduate. And it's going to be an interesting example of established, you know, Biden wing, Democrat Party, the whole bit, and then the Carolyn Leavitt, the young gal, she's running on, you know, a lot of Trump-type stuff. So that'll be interesting. Even talking about, you know, election fraud, we need to shore up elections. So that's going to be really interesting to see how that that comes out. I'd be surprised if she wins it, but it's close right now.
Well, Indy Hawk, did you see there's a new poll out on that race, and she's up 6 points in that poll?
Really?
It surprised me. It just came out today. It's the same one that in the Senate race, the Bulldog race, either tied or a 1 point lead, maybe for Bulldog. She's ahead by six. And
wow.
In the other House race, which is supposed to be a toss up, the Democrats ahead by eight there. So, and you're right, that was always showing toss up, or maybe she was a little behind. So, you know, maybe we're really seeing with some of these polls, not to be cynical, it's just we're seeing late deciders and stuff really breaking for the Republicans, and that's why we're seeing all these generic ballots showing Republicans ahead, even where they were behind in the last polls they did. And I was surprised. I saw that she was up six, 51-45.
That's cool. And
youngest member.
I hope you have an updated number on this, too. Indiana has a, in Northwest Indiana, up near Chicago, Jennifer Ruth Green versus Frank Nervin. I'm not sure if I'm saying that right. But she's a black representative woman. It'd be the second time a black Republican woman in history was elected to the chamber. And that's up near in the Gary, Indiana area. So that would be an interesting – I think the last I saw was he was up by 7, but that would be a really neat thing if she pulled that for the GOP.
You know, they do have that as a toss-up, but I don't know anything more about that. I thought maybe you might know. It sounds like you're saying that recent polling had him up slightly. They do have it in the toss-up column on the RCP average. I've been kind of using that to go by because I think they do a pretty good job. So that's something to keep your eye on, especially, you know, the thing is if you have a wave election, which I think a lot of us are starting to think this is going to be, you have all these close races usually tip the one way. And, you know, we'll see if that happens. It's got all the earmarks of a wave election. I'll give you an example, too, of something that's not theoretical. I was just checking this before we came on. In Hank's home state of Florida, they've got close to 3 million early and mail-in ballots in. And they know party breakdowns because apparently they do release this. At this time in 2020, a week out, there were 387,000 more Democrats voting early than Republicans. And that was in a race in which Trump won Florida by 4 points. So Republicans came out massively on Election Day. As of today, in the early mail-in voting and early in-person voting combined, the Republicans are up, here we are 6 days out, by 176,000 over the Democrats. And so if I was a Democrat, I would be quaking in my boots about – I mean, I think we all think that DeSantis and Ruby aren't going to have a problem, but there is a slew of close House races. I think Republicans are looking to pick up 4 or 5, and that's hard numbers of Republicans versus Democrats. It's a huge shift from 2020, and I think that bodes really well for Republicans picking up. There's like 4 or 5 House seats that they can gain in Florida. This would indicate that's going to happen, and if it could be a microcosm of what's going around the nation. But those are hard numbers, real numbers. 170 out of 3 million votes, 176,000 vote margin for Republicans over Democrats.
Yeah, the overall numbers are much bigger for Republicans as well. Of new, I mean, after new registrations, there are some. It's like the overall number is like 300,000 more Republican registrations than Democrat. You know, I mean, that's unheard of, you know, I mean, almost anywhere. So I'm looking in Florida. I'm looking at District 10, which is my district, Calvin Wimbish, a black Republican, against Maxwell Frost, a black Democrat. They're looking for Stephanie Murphy's old seat, but that was District 7. So it's, you know, we got redistricted. So it's now District 10. And I'm not sure why she pulled out, but polls are sort of calling it for Frost, and that wouldn't surprise me. But between the two of them, I've seen zero TV ads, zero radio ads, nothing in the way of social media. I mean, whoever wins this race is getting off really, really cheap. It's really surprising. It's just weird. The new District 7, where Murphy was originally, you know, before, is that one is predicted now as GOP and not Democrat. Now, the other one I'm looking at, Illinois. Bill Foster, the incumbent in District 11, Catalina Lauf, 27 or 29-year-old. She was really originally running to unseat Adam Kinzinger from the old District 16, but they combined districts and stuff. She never got out of the primary before. Now she's been, you know, she's been a MAGA-style Republican all along. She was the youngest appointee to the Commerce Department. Big Left, of course, is painting her as an attractive but empty and dumb Republican devoid of any intellect. Yet she was homeschooled. She graduated 2 years early from Miami of Ohio, and she has always acquitted herself well in media appearances. Politico calls it for Foster, not a shock. But several local media outlets are saying, don't be so sure. They're saying do not at all be sure. The only problem with Catalina Lopp, they say, is that most of her money has come from the party. She's not raised enough organically to make herself visible the same way. But still, I mean, that to me is just, what started out as kind of a joke. And now she's talked about as a real possible up-and-comer, in Illinois.
And I think they thought Illinois was going to be tough for Republicans, because I think it got heavily gerrymandered in the run-up, in the last few months by the Democrats. And now it's looking like there's some possibilities in Illinois that Republicans may end up not losing any seats. Looked like they were just through gerrymandering going to lose a couple. It turns out, I think I saw something that suburban Chicago seat that had been Republican, but that went to this guy named Sean Casten, Democrat in the last couple elections, that's a toss-up. And obviously, if that was to switch, flip back to the Republicans, it used to be the seat, I think, of Henry Hyde. But you might know this better than I, Hank, northern suburbs of Chicago.
Yeah.
And if that flips back, the Republicans, obviously indicative of a pretty good night for the GOP.
Yeah. I mean, we're hearing, at one point it was like there would be a 20. Now they're thinking there may be as much as 30 that flip from Democrat to Republican. I mean, if that happens.
Yeah.
I think that's
about right, actually.
I mean, that's Obama. What happened in Obama?
We can all make our predictions, I'm kind of a wonk on this. I love this stuff, probably too much for my own good. I'm not working Wednesday after the election night because I may pull an all nighter. I'll just be
there'll be a lot of close races. You may be needed on the recounts.
There's going to be a lot of close races, and they'll probably go into the wee hours. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Republicans will just slam dunk everything. But I think some of these Senate races, you'll be looking at 6 in the morning, and some of them could even be like we have to wait a few days for other stuff to come in. Hopefully that won't happen. But Pennsylvania is kind of notorious for that.
Yeah, Obama's making the rounds, doing the last minute. Lobbying for Dem candidates. I mean, my gosh, that's why I'm hopeful. I mean, that's beautiful. This is the architect of the biggest loss in the last 7
that's
years.
That's right. They lost 63.
The guy lost
votes
69 when, seats.
yeah. So why do they think he's going to save them? He couldn't save it when he was president.
Exactly. I think he might be hoping he can help Biden break his record so he can get it off his back.
That's probably the case. It probably is. It's not funny in a sense. I mean, it probably very close to reality. So let's segue back to football for a second. Let's do our Big Ten picks for this week. Andy, we'll start with you. Ohio State at Northwestern. I assume you're taking Ohio State?
Absolutely. Brad
Mike?
On that one about 103.
Yeah, I'm kidding, Mike. I assume
it's gonna be ugly, Hank. Yeah, Ohio State. It could be 70-0.
Yeah, it could. That could be really bad. That one could be really bad. It really could. Mike, we'll start with you on this next one. Minnesota at Nebraska.
Well, this is interesting. They're both kind of on a downward trajectory. I think. I think Minnesota a little bit less so. So you got to pick somebody. I'll go with Minnesota.
Andy, how about you?
I'm going to go Minnesota. A lot of unknowns with Nebraska. They're kind of figuring out, how they're going to be and how do you react to it. He's a temporary coach, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think he's still trying to win the job.
Yeah. Yeah, Minnesota's got a pretty good team. I think they'll win this.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm going to go with Nebraska on this one. I know I'm going to be contrarian like Brother Tommy with Illinois last year. So, okay, here's another one. Andy, we'll start you off on this one. Maryland at Wisconsin.
I'll go Wisconsin. That should be a pretty interesting game, though. I assume that's going to be it's a pretty low spread. So I like Maryland. I like a lot about Maryland, a quarterback. And, you know, Wisconsin's kind of a train wreck right now. So
yeah,
but I still
exactly.
think Wisconsin.
Mike, how about you?
Well, you know, I think since they got rid of Chris and Leonard's steady the ship a little bit, but I agree with Indy Hawk. Maryland's, I think, are they 6-2, something like that?
Yeah.
Steve, Michigan, all they wanted up in Ann Arbor, I think they lost by 7.
Yeah.
And I Wisconsin, though, I Maryland's going to be a handful. I'm going to go with an upset here and pick Maryland.
Ooh.
Close game.
Okay. Well, I'm going to go Wisconsin, but mainly because it's their home, you know, it's their place. I just, I'm not sold on Wisconsin holding things together. Penn State and Indiana. Indy, Mike, we'll start with you.
Penn State, I think, is pretty good. And, you know, they lost to Ohio State, but they gave them a hell of a fight. I think Penn State's for real, and they'll beat Indiana.
Okay, and Andy, how about you?
I agree with 100% what Hawkeye Mike just said. Penn State, that was a heck of a game. They gave Ohio State all they wanted. And Indiana, they're mediocre. So
yeah, they had the win over Illinois early, but that's about it. So I'm going to go with Penn State as well. Okay, Mike Andy, we'll start with you. Michigan State and Illinois.
I'm going Illinois just because of Brother Tommy. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
They're not getting any respect. Their defense, I think their defense is top 5 or top 10 I saw in some
ranking. Exactly. Exactly. Mike, how about you?
You know what? I've become a believer in Illinois. So, yeah, Illinois is going to win, I think, pretty easily.
Okay. And then Michigan at Rutgers. Mike, we'll start with you.
Well, I've always been a believer in Michigan, and Rutgers, pretty inconsistent, but, you know, the Iowa went in there and beat them.
Yeah, just, exactly.
Win easy.
Yeah. How about you, Indy? I assume you're going to go the same way?
Yep, I'll go Michigan. I like the quarterback, as you guys know, so I'm hoping he's evolving.
Yeah, you've become the Brother Tommy of J.J. McCarthy's fandom.
Yep. There you go. Good analogy.
So
have you talked to Brother Tommy? Does he feel vindicated about Illinois?
He does, but he's wearing it a little hard. So, you know, he's a little full of himself on it. But, you know, he was right. You know, he's just a year off. So, you know. Okay, so before we pick our final game, of course, let's talk about last week. Mike, start with you. What looked good?
Well, I mean, I thought the offense looked the best, which is not saying a whole lot, by the way, looked the best they had all year. But then you have to factor in who we were playing still. The thing that was the most heartening to me was, and again, you have to factor in who we were playing, the offensive line looked to me by far their best game. They were opening up holes. They were giving Petras time to throw. And Petras can be serviceable if he's not pressured and has time to throw. And he can, you know, check off and do his progression. He was able to do that against Northwestern. And so the Iowa offense, and then the run game was better. So the Iowa offense was you know, vastly improved over the way they had looked previously. And, again, you have to factor in who we're playing. But still, it was a good game to give them a little confidence. And Purdue's defense is not so taxing this year as they were last year. Although I'm concerned about the game, I think there's some hope now that Iowa can move the ball and have a decent showing on offense against Purdue. We'll see, but that's the main takeaway I get from the Northwestern victory.
Okay, Andy, what looks good to you?
In the offensive line, I mean – that they said that stat on the broadcast. I think I texted it to you guys. 33% of our running plays for the year have gone for negative yardage. I mean, that's just astounding for an Iowa offense that is, you know, geared on the run.
Yeah.
But yeah, the offensive line looked better. A lot of double tight ends. I like that. We got tight ends up, you know, as many as we want. But,
yeah,
they did play better. So I'm hoping we're making some momentum.
Yeah, I mean, I think it wasn't just – I mean, yes, we can talk about who we played, but what I also wasn't seeing from the line, I wasn't seeing the stupid false starts. They look more in sync. You know, like all season, it's looked like there's like a half second delay between the snap and the line moving. That seemed to be a little better. I also like the fact that we still run those jet sweeps. Welcome to 2006 Iowa football. But the thing is, we actually did fake a couple of them. You know, we actually got back to where we did some motion, but didn't actually run it. And that, you know, if you could do that effectively, you basically spread, at least you get some of the horizontal spread of the defense, you know, that you need. You know, if you can't spread them vertically, then you've got to spread them horizontally, you know. But if you can spread them horizontally, then at least you at least have a shot to spread them a little bit more vertically. You know, that's the way to do it. So, you know, okay, Mike, what still worries you?
Well, what worries me is how this offense will perform against a little bit better defense. I saw some things that gave me hope, but I think it's still an open question. I also wanted to say that I think Iowa does have some good running backs here with Caleb Johnson particularly, who I think is going to be a real star. He just looks great, and he's had to run under some tough conditions. And then LaShawn Williams has also done a good job. And they both had good games last week. And, I mean, I think if we can just get the offensive line in sync and get a little better offensively, we've got two good running backs. And then I'm not even talking about Gavin Williams. He hasn't played quite as much and hasn't made as much of an impact. But I think LaShawn Williams and particularly Caleb Johnson just look like, you know, really good running backs. And hopefully, you know, they're going to be around for another couple of years. And I think that if we can get our offensive line in shape, well, our running game is going to be looking pretty good in the next year or two.
Andy, what still worries you? What did you see that made you kind of think, oh, God?
Well, just the offense still worries me. But, you know, when we get against a better opponent. But, you know, I think we have everything there. I don't know why it takes this long to put it together. This is our ninth different defensive line. They changed it up again. But, yeah, I was thinking about Gavin Williams. He was the number one back, you know, and he was highly recruited.
Yeah.
He just had a bad year. Like, he's been in – I know he got injured right away. So we have three good running backs, but hopefully he sticks around.
Yep.
But he doesn't transfer.
Yeah. Okay, so – Andy, we'll start with you here. What's it going to take to win Saturday?
Shut down Charlie Jones. No, I didn't say that, Hank. I think we got to run the ball. We got to control the ball. You know, it's all the basic stuff. You know, we're not going to win unless the offensive line performs. And to me, it's been a year and a half. That last year's line, you know, we got a lot of breaks in some games. We won a lot of close games. Offensive line wasn't classic Iowa football last year. Then we lost Linderbaum. You know, I think about that like, wow, we were complaining about the line last year, and we lost one of the highest rated centers in history, you know, for the metrics and all that, and Linderbaum. So part of that is like, okay, well, what did we think? But yeah, I mean, I think we got a good shot. I think, you know, we can control the ball against Purdue. I think we need to. So.
Okay. Mike, what do you think it's going to take to win?
Well, I totally agree with what Indy Hawk said. It's our off. We can win this game if our offense continues the improvement from last week. I don't really have too much criticism of the offense from last week. Again, you know, we'll see how they do against a little tougher opponents. But that's the key, because I think our defense is always going to be there, and they need to be, because Purdue's offense can be pretty dynamic. But we played Michigan, we played Ohio State, we've done well defensively against both those teams. I think Ohio State was held under 400 yards the only time this year.
Yep.
Iowa gave up 27 points on offense, basically through turnovers. in that game. That's half of the 54 Ohio State scored.
Yeah, exactly.
But and also our offense being totally in. Same thing against Michigan. They got 7 points in garbage time, pretty much held them to 20 points in that game.
Yeah.
No one else has done that. So we can win this game, but like Indy Hawk says, our offense has to sustain some drives, has to keep the ball, and if we can do that, we can beat Purdue.
Yeah. What worries me is are we going to sell out to stop Charlie Jones? You know, I don't think we will. I can't believe we will. Yeah, I also think Phil. You know, Phil's got beat up a couple times by Purdue recently, so I think he's ready to just say, okay, that's enough of that. So, you know, we may see some wrinkles. I would feel a lot better, or I shouldn't say this. Three weeks ago I would have said I'd feel a lot better if Justin Jacobs was also available, but I'll tell you what, Jay Higgins, for one, has been great as a run stuffer. He has really come on.
Purdue's defense is not they were a very good defense last year. That George Karloff, they lost to people. They're not the same defense.
Yeah,
and people have been moving the ball. Purdue wins because they've outscored some people, and I'm not taking anything away from them. But Iowa should be able to move the ball and get some stuff done offensively against Purdue. If they can't, it'll really be disappointing.
Yeah. I just think what it boils down to is we've got to sustain drives. A big play is great. I mean, especially a big pass play would be awesome because it would open things up. But I mean, if we don't sustain drives from the get-go, we're going to get crushed. I mean, it's just that simple. We must sustain drives. It's simple as that. Nothing more. Nothing less.
That's what shocked me about the statistic. 33% of our rush plays ended in a loss. This is not an offense. You know, you get a second and 11. That's not a big play offense. You know, we need to be consistent for sure.
Yeah.
You need second and five. You don't need
second and five, third and two, and mm-hmm. all day long.
Yep.
Because, frankly, other than a play where you're way back in your own, you know, like against Ohio State where we ended up throwing a pick six, other than that, I mean – If you're starting at normal field position, you know, between the 20 and the 35-yard line, say, and you're at third mm-hmm. and two, well, you know what? Not converting a third and two isn't as catastrophic then, you know? But when you're on your own 12 running third and 18, holy crap. I mean, you're putting all your pressure on your punter at that point. It just, you know, you can't continue. I mean, to put pressure on your punter and your defense week after week, you can beat teams like Northwestern and Nevada. You can't beat even a Purdue. So
Keegan Johnson is out again. I just saw that today. So, I mean, is he eligible for a redshirt? He hasn't really played.
I think he is. He is. Eligible.
Yeah. He's
four
games or less. You can play up to four games. So,
yeah, it seems like he hasn't played.
If they hold him out, if he's not playing against Purdue, there's only three games left after that. They could actually, if he's able, They could play him all three of the last
He has appeared in two games. He's actually appeared in two, I think.
Yeah,
and, well, how about this? They keep him out this week and next week, and then he can play the last two games and still keep his red shirt.
Yeah. But the question is, would you put him in a bowl game? But who knows? I mean, I don't, you know.
Yeah.
So let's do it. So, Indy, who are you picking this Saturday?
I'm taking the Hawks. I think we're putting it together. Offensive line's coming together and sticking to it.
Okay, Mike?
Yeah, you know, I want to be optimistic about Iowa, and there's some grounds to be after last week, so I think the Hawks are going to win.
I do too. I think, again, Phil Parker alone has, you know, has had a couple of rough outings against Purdue. And I don't think he's going to let Charlie Jones do what David Bell has done to us. I also won't be surprised, as somebody said, if Charlie Jones runs into a Mack truck. Not dirty play, but, you know, a good hit. The other thing is Kirk Ferentz has had it too as well, has had problems, you know, with Purdue. So I think he would kind of, you know, I think the way, you know, it's one thing the way Tyrone Tracy left, but the way Charlie Jones left and, I think it's pretty clear that that was tampering. I guess I'm the only person that'll say it openly and out loud and continue to do so, but I think that's fact. I think he thinks it was tampering, and I think he wants to get back for that. So that's just me, so I'm going to go with Iowa as well. Okay,
way,
let's get to
an
our
early game, everybody. Just a reminder, it's an early game. It's on here at 10 o'clock, FS1, but so I guess you guys are a little later, but if you're in Eastern time, but it's a noon start.
Yeah,
local.
noon for Eastern, yeah. So, you know, and I think the Hawks don't necessarily do worse than that scenario. I'm not saying they do better, but I think one thing Kirk Ferentz talked about years ago, though, remember in 2002, everybody said, you know, gosh, you know, your team was so ready. Well, one of the things, almost all our games that season, save one or two, were noon games. And, you know, when everything's consistent like that, that's a huge help for the team. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, the jumping around the schedule doesn't help. Okay, let's get to our Senate races. Mike, give me a couple Senate races that you're watching or that you think we need to be watching.
Well, the one I'm watching now that's kind of intriguing me is this, because it's coming into the real tight, real possibility, I think, now, is the New Hampshire race. And this Baldock has come on, and the last polls have it tied, or I think there's even one has him up one. Of course, Pennsylvania is important. But that's one. And then out west, Nevada and Arizona, of course. I'm cautiously optimistic on Nevada. There's been a consistent lead for Laxalt over the what's her name, Cortez Masto. So yeah. Let's hope that that comes through. And then it's going to be intriguing, Arizona as well. And then I'm keeping my eye on one local one here, and that's the Senate race in Colorado. If it is a good night for Republicans, a wave's going, keep your eye on that race. O'Day could give the Republican could give Bennett, the Democratic senator, a close race and could pull it out.
How many of those would be? I mean, if the Republicans pull it out, how many of those would be flips? Are you talking all flips in all those cases,
yeah,
or
those, all? Well, yeah, the Arizona, Nevada, if Colorado were to come through, New Hampshire would all be gains.
Okay.
But the only seat we're really defending that I think up in the air is this Pennsylvania race. But Georgia would be a gain.
Yeah.
Right now, the RCP average has Republicans gaining four seats for 54. They have Arizona, Nevada, Georgia and New Hampshire all going Republican. We'll see, but that's what RCP has, and
RCP has Fetterman beating Oz.
No, they have Oz winning. They have
okay.
Republicans not losing any, and
oh, okay.
gaining
okay.
those four.
Oh, okay, I see what you're saying. Okay. And Andy, how about you? Anything that you're
Yeah, I'm watching the Georgia one for sure. I mean, I'm still angry at the last election there. But, well, yeah, Warnock, I mean, that's an important place for the Republicans to hold ground. And then the other one's the Pennsylvania with Oz and Fetterman. They're both of these are squarely in the toss-up with RCP.
Quick note, I don't know if you guys know this on the Georgia race, And Hank touched on this in his obits. Vince Dooley, the legendary George coach, died about a week ago. But before he died, he videotaped a endorsement of Herschel Walker that they're playing, where he looks right in the camera and says, "You got to get out and vote for Herschel." Now, Herschel Walker didn't want to run it after he passed away, but apparently Vince Dooley's family's insisting that he run it, so he's keeping it up. And you know, Vince Dooley is a real legend. He's what Hayden Fry was style. Having him on there doing that ad, I guess, is pretty powerful ad, especially having just passed away.
Yeah. Any others that you're watching, Andy, or that are close or anything?
Just the Indiana one, but you know he's going to win that. So.
Yeah, well, that would be important. So, yeah, I'm watching that Warnock-Walker one. There's a couple things that have jumped out to me. One, Herschel Walker hasn't been the brightest star. You know, he's had his hiccups, but he's also owned all his stuff. I mean, anything that they bring up, he's owning it. You know, he's not saying, you know, oh, this, you know, he's not making excuses. He's just saying, you know, this is my past, you know. Warnock continues to be corrupt and dishonest, continues to get caught in stuff. I mean, what's the latest now that he's been using campaign funds for child care expenses? I mean, really?
Yeah, I saw that.
I mean,
well, keep one thing in mind about Georgia, too. It's a runoff state, so whoever wins on election night or morning, if they don't have 50%, I think it's highly likely it could go to a runoff. I think, my view is Walker's going to win, but he may not be 50%. You go to a runoff. If I'm wrong, Warnock could pull it out, but again, not hit 50 very easily, and then they have a runoff. I think the runoff will actually favor Walker because it tends to favor the challenger, especially since the third party, who's going to get some of the vote, like 3% or something, is a libertarian. Most of that would probably go to Walker. If you remember in 2020, the two Republicans lost their runoffs. They were the incumbents, the Democrat one.
Yeah, well, and frankly, 2020, you also had the same thing that happened, because remember, those were in July or January. What happened to those was the very same thing that happened during the presidential election, where Republicans were leading, and then they stopped the vote count, and then suddenly they come back, and before the vote count almost starts, they're saying, oh, Democrats got a lead. You know, I mean, it's just – look, wisdom says Warnock has done everything to lose what should have been an incumbent advantage. I mean – you know, forget how he won in 2020. I mean, along with John Ossoff, but God, I mean, this guy did all he had to do was hold serve, so to speak. Sort of the way Stacey Abrams, as a challenger, in a sense, had everything working in her favor, and she somehow managed to absolutely blow both feet off with the bazooka. You know, I mean, Warnock has seemingly done that. You know, I just don't even. You know, even after the recount, I'm going to predict Walker there. Now, the other one I'm following, Rubio and Demings. Now, Demings has run as sleazy a campaign as anyone probably in the history. She's managed to sugarcoat her own records. For instance, she talks about cops loving her. Cops aren't supporting her. When she was police chief of Orlando, her car was broken into and her service revolver was stolen. She didn't report it until it came to, you know, until suddenly some kind of audit. In other words, she said she reported it duly. She didn't. It took an audit for her to report it. So she wasn't reporting it. It took an audit for her to openly admit it. You know, her role in the impeachment, you know, tried to talk about her role in the impeachment hearings, and that's busted. You know, her ties to outside money are now being brought up. Excuse me. Swallowed wrong. He has basically nailed her. Rubio has nailed her on her voting record. He's done a great job pointing her, you know, painting her as a Biden puppet and always voting with Biden. I'll go with Rubio there. Whereas 2 months ago, I would have said, man, this is going to be close. And I would think Demings, but now I'm thinking Rubio is probably going to win pretty comfortably.
Yeah. Well, my understanding was that he had, you know, was kind of pulling away, and I just looking while you're talking, the RCP average has Rubio up by 7.5. I think, you know, with those numbers I was reading on the early voting and with DeSantis likely to win big, I'm really not too worried. I think Rubio's going to win pretty easily.
And yeah, I also don't think she has much recognition outside of Central Florida. I mean, she's basically a Central Florida person. You know, there was nothing for her to gain there. But I think that's where she's campaigned a lot. The other laugh was when somebody said that she wiped the floor with Rubio in their debate, because anybody who saw that debate, it was comical almost. I mean, it wasn't quite Oz versus Fetterman, but it was damn close. I mean, she was just bad. She's just not.
Like something an MSNBC analyst probably said.
I mean, I've met her husband several times. He's a great guy. He's the Orange County mayor. I don't agree with him almost anything politically, but he's a hell of a great guy. And he is a cop's cop, so to speak, much more so than she ever was. it's really weird the way their careers sort of, you know, wind back and forth, because he was the chief and then he became sheriff. She became chief and then suddenly she was running for Congress. I don't know, you know, and he left as sheriff and is now Orange County mayor, which is going to be term limited. He's going to get term limited out of that at some point. So I don't know. It's weird the way their careers have sort of divided and then come back. And, you know, it's weird. It's bizarre. So the other one, I still think Oz Fetterman. I mean, it sounds like Oz is picked to win that. Am I right on that or not?
On RCP average, they do have that seat being retained by the Republicans, so Oz winning.
Okay. I mean, I don't know how it got as far as it did with Fetterman keeping, you know, I mean, it just goes to show you how dangerous it's become. I mean, the fact that, you know, what's happening to Fetterman has just come a little more public. I mean, you know, why that hasn't happened to Biden yet, I know. You know, why it hasn't come out publicly that this guy is incompetent, like Fetterman has shown, you know? I mean, I just don't know why we can't get...
Well, if Republicans get waxed, Hank, I think you're going to see a lot more of that on the Democrats. They're starting to see a little bit of that questioning his fitness for office, because he's going to get all the blame. He's going to get all the blame.
Yeah, and can he stand up to it? And my guess is no, he cannot, so...
Well, he's given a speech tonight, so maybe he's going to turn this whole thing around, and we don't even know it yet.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God.
Yeah, I cannot believe he's going to choose. Supposedly, it's in response to the Pelosi thing. I have a feeling that this isn't about elections and democracy. I have a feeling this is Pelosi saying, you need to go out there and do some damage control for me.
He's just going to be attacking Republicans. I'm not going to watch that garbage. Complete... You know, outrage, and it's gonna be blatantly political. I hope
Hail Mary.
Most networks should they should understand that this is like a political speech. This isn't he's just acting as a political hack here. He's not presidential at all.
He's right. Gonna say it's the end of democracy if they win. Blah blah blah.
Yeah, it's the end of democracy if the Democrats don't win.
That's his word of the day.
How they can even be allowed, you know, in a sense, it's sickening. I mean, Obama would do it, but a Jimmy Carter never did it. Bill Clinton never did it.
The problems we're having with inflation, the economy, crime, and he's going to come out 6 days before the election and give a speech that just bashes Republicans as enemies of democracy. That's his message to the American people.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the other thing, I mean, you're still seeing people, I mean, I referenced Rob Reiner. Rob Reiner and others are still hitching their wagon to this Republicans have pledged to get rid of Social Security and all this. It's like, what Republican has ever, 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 ever said that? None. The answer is none. I mean, literally zero have ever said. How do they get away?
He's bragging about gas prices. With the press secretary, Peter Ducey's asking, going, it was $4.10, and it was $2.80 when he was elected. How is that a good thing? Well, it's down a dollar, and that helps Americans. You don't understand. It's like, wow, what am I listening to here?
Yeah, I mean, has anybody
being a catastrophe to a disaster?
Yeah,
I mean, I'm looking at the grocery things every week. And seeing right now turkeys, you can find a turkey for like $1.08 a pound, $1.07 a pound. Well, if you don't see turkeys under $1 a pound at any time up to Thanksgiving, then you know that this inflation's here to stay, so to speak. I mean, it's just it's not a temporary thing, at least when I say temporary, it's going to be a year or more before we can ever get this back under control. So, and I don't know how the Fed, you know, how the Fed can sit there and do that at the same time, make no statements about things like student loan debt cancellation, although I think that student loan debt cancellation is a non-starter. I think that's going to be pulled off the table. It's going to get knocked down in the courts somewhere, somehow, so it doesn't really matter anyway. So, to me.
Just out of curiosity, can I just ask you guys real quick, are you guys voting early, or are you going to vote on Election Day?
I always vote on Election Day. I think one time I voted early. How about you, Andy?
I'll do early.
Okay. I wake up to be the first person at the polls on election day.
I usually
do that about, like the last three or four times. Except no, midterms 2018, I actually voted early because I was going to be somewhere in 2018, so like then I couldn't. So,
well, we're all mail here in Colorado, so I voted by mail, but I kind of missed that. You know, I used to remember the days. I'm sure we all do, where you used to look forward to going into the polling station and vote and saying hi to all the old blue haired ladies that were sitting there at the tables and stuff.
Well, now there's still blue-haired ladies. It's just guys, though, that are doing it.
Oh, is that right? Yeah. There used to be old ladies, oh, hi, how are you? You know, kind of stuff. And it was just kind of it made it kind of a civic event. You know, I think it was good for the country to, you know, you might stand in line. I've done that for a little bit. And then you go in and you shut that you know, you vote on that machine or whatever, you feed it
in.
Back in the days when there was only two genders. It just wasn't turning out enough Democrats when you had to go vote in person. That's why we don't do it.
Yeah, well, why make somebody get up and leave the house when they're getting the benefits, you know? Why should they have to leave the house to vote for those benefits? That's the way I, you know. I don't know if I told you guys this. When I did my primary vote here, I was voting next to a guy who started talking to he was talking to the person. He is the vice chair of Stacey Abrams, one of her campaign, like Idiots for Abrams or something. He's a vice chair of her campaign. Now I'm thinking, how is this guy in Orlando, Florida? No, but a guy in Orlando, Florida, standing next to me voting in Florida. How is that happening? But he's the vice chair of an Abrams campaign. She's not running for a nationwide seat at them. I mean, just that alone, what does that tell you? Just how these people will stop at nothing. No, that would be like talking to Rob Reiner. It would be seriously. Why am I gonna? I just thought it was bizarre that it was happening. But by the same token, I don't know. I mean, literally, though, some of these people, they just don't care. As far as when you say cheating, Ed justifies the means. I mean, that's how they look at it. I mean, that's just how sleazy and immoral and unethical they are. You know. Hey, Mike,
Go ahead.
I was going to ask you, is there any elections in Iowa that are rather contentious or anything? I mean,
yeah, I think there is one. A couple. I don't think there's been some talk about, you know, Grassley getting the top. I think he'll win, and I think the governor there is cruising to victory. But there's a couple House seats. The one Democrat representing Des Moines area is that's RCP has that lean Republican, so she's in big trouble.
Really?
She's one of these classic liberals, you know. I think her whole campaign's been about abortion rights.
Yeah.
But I think keep your eye on that one. Hope that goes down. And then there's two Republican women in eastern Iowa. One's Ashley Hinson, and the other one's this Marionette Miller Meeks.
Right.
They're favored, but it's considered lean Republicans. These are pretty evenly split between Democrats and Republicans.
Didn't Miller Meeks in her last election?
By like six votes. She won by six votes in 2020.
Right.
Now, you know, there's been some reapportionments a little bit different, but they're both in races where, they could be toss-up races if this wasn't. They're both lean Republican right now, so I think they'll win.
Yeah.
Hopefully the Republicans pick up that seat in Iowa's third district, which is the Des Moines area, and get rid of Cindy Axne.
Now, who's Grassley even running against? I mean, I haven't.
A guy who's a retired admiral. He's actually not a bad candidate for them. And you know, Chuck's 88, so I think that's the one thing that's caused some people to kind of wonder. Although he's
how long has he been in there?
He's been in there 40 years. He was elected in 1980 or something.
Yeah, I was a freshman in Iowa City. I voted for him in my first general election.
Yeah.
That's what I thought.
And if you remember his nickname back then, we used to call him, I mean, I voted for him, and I, you know, but we used to call him Chuck the Talking
Chuck
Horse.
Chuck the Talking Horse. I remember he ran against a guy named John Culver.
Who was the incumbent senator at the time.
Yeah, but who had this had this campaign snafu where some guy got at one of some campaign staff got on and supposedly attacked him. But, you know, as more came out, it looked like, well, this might have been staged. You know, I mean, it was kind of, you know, but yeah, Tom, what's Tom Harkin doing now?
I don't know. He's just retired, I guess. I think he's still alive, but I don't know what he's up to.
Yeah. Gosh,
you know,
some of the old...
it used to be Iowa. Used to be more of a swing state. You know, Obama once, twice. We've
yeah.
had, you know, Tom Harkin, and it could go either way. But they've really shifted in the last, you know, couple of cycles, become more Republican. And, you know, obviously in this kind of an environment, you would expect Republicans to do pretty well in Iowa.
Yeah, I would hope, but you know, you just don't know. So. So, well, guys, that kind of wraps it up, though. We've covered everything. I was shocked that we got it over. Let's do the final thing. How about, let's give it an overall prediction. Mike, I'll start with you. In the House, what's the gain? What's the net gain for Republicans?
I do think that we're looking at a potential red wave, but I always don't – I never like to count my chickens before they're hatched.
Yeah.
You know, people have to turn out. It's all predicated on people actually getting out and voting. But
yeah.
It looks like it's all leaning towards the Republicans. I've never seen polls like this, really. I'm thinking it's going to be 30 seats for the Republicans, puts them up over 240 in the House.
Okay.
And the Senate –
Indy, how about you? What do you think? What do you think the gain will be?
I think it'll be 35 to 40 in that range.
I'll say 30.
That's up toward 250. Wow, that'd be great.
I'll say 30 could happen. Yeah, I mean, that won't shock me. 40 would be wow.
Yeah,
but I just don't know that there's 40 seats that are really that, you know. You know, I mean, for instance, we don't know what's happening in places like Texas. I mean, I don't know what's, you know, some of those places,
well,
you know, it's hard to say.
I can enlighten you, Hank. There's looking at a couple Republican gains down there.
They are, okay.
But I think the thing is, and I think Indy Hawk might be kind of alluding to this, if, and the polls are showing this, if it really is a red wave election, you're going to see races won that Republicans have no business winning.
Yeah.
And so it could easily get there. I'm just being a little, I'm trying to dampen my expectations here. So I don't, you know, but I certainly think it's possible we get 40. I wouldn't have thought that a couple weeks ago, but I do think it's possible now.
Yeah, I would go with 30. That would be, I think that's the, you know, if we get 30, that's, you know, wow. You know, that's a big, huge, you know. Let's not forget, though, as people have talked about, I'm not sure that I'm all that fired up about a red wave that puts Kevin McCarthy in the speaker position and keeps Mitch, you know, just puts Mitch McConnell as the majority leader versus the minority leader. You know, I mean, some people are going to have to make some challenges. These guys are going to have to step up their own game, you know, some of these guys. So that's just, you know. Now, in the Senate side, Mike, what do you think is going to happen? What do you think?
Well, you know, you can get carried away again, and I think there's potential there. It wouldn't surprise me if that RCP is right. We get 54, maybe 55 seats. I'm not going to predict that, but I am going to say I think we get pick up a couple, we get 52.
Andy, how about you?
I mean, it's been fun watching that RCP projection go up 52, 53, now it's 54. I'll say 53, but hoping for 54, 55.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think that's more important. I'll say 55, and I know that's probably really pushing it, but I think that would be more important in a way. I mean, it's not a filibuster-proof Senate, but by the same token, it suddenly it changes. You know, Joe Manchin.
Well, stop all those crazy appointments to the judges and in the executive branch. Plus, if you can get 54, 55, even 53, we're not dependent on Mitt Romney and Lisa Murkowski and Susan Collins. You know, we don't. You know, they can go rogue, which they will, and we don't. You know, it won't make a difference. But if it's 51 or 2, what they do becomes more problematic.
Yeah. Murkowski's up again, right? She's in, is she,
she's running against another Republican. Yeah.
Right.
She back,
and it's neck and it's neck and neck.
Didn't she back a Democrat?
Yeah, she is. And you know, what's controversial there is that McConnell was pumping all kinds of money to her to defeat another Republican. And the Alaska Republican Party was very upset and objecting to this because her opponent, who's a Republican, was the official nominee of the Republican Party. And the only reason they're even running against each other is because Alaska has this crazy ranked choice system, which is basically a construct to help out Murkowski, I think, because the top two go forward, and then I think there's two other people running who'll get a small amount. All their votes get shifted to the top two. And I think they're both Democrats who are going to get 3 or 4% of the vote, but they're probably their second choice is going to be Murkowski. I think it's corrupt almost, but anyway, that's how they do it there. So Murkowski, I think will squeak it out. I hope I'm wrong. I think it's a chance that the other woman there, her name's Kelly Shibaka, who's a real Republican, could win, but Murkowski may pull it out.
Yeah. Now, there's another thing that's kind of telling. There's the Liz Cheney effect, so to speak, that, she's gone and made Democrat endorsements, and for the most part, they're falling on their face. She's falling on their collective face versus the Tulsi Gabbard effect, which seems to be, Republicans that she's endorsing are finding better footing. I mean, it's almost laughable. I mean, I'm not sure what's going to happen to Liz Cheney after this, but whatever it is,
I'll make one prediction about her in this election. There's a lot of unknowables and speculation about what's going to happen. The influence of Liz Cheney on this election will be non-existent. If it has even the smallest effect, it will be to help Republicans, I think.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, exactly. I think what do you think happens to her after this? Where do you think she surfaces? Where does she pop up?
Well, it depends. If she wants a political career, she should just, walk over to the Democratic side. Because
leave Wyoming, which would also mean she'd have to leave Wyoming.
Which she's pretty much been living in Washington most of it, from what I've been reading. She doesn't spend a lot of time out in Wyoming.
So that'll be that's something we could talk about next week is what'll happen with Liz Cheney. Okay, well, guys, let's cut it off for now, and we'll be back next week. Obviously, we'll be talking about the Hawks-Purdue game, and we'll be talking about the results of these elections. In the meantime, get out there, folks. Get out there and vote. Don't forget the Charlie Brown episode where he forgot to vote for himself. Or no, that wasn't Charlie Brown. Charlie Brown lost. Bart Simpson forgot to vote for himself. Same thing. If you don't vote, if you don't get out and vote, things can happen. We can lose. So get out there. Hey, guys, thanks for being on. And, of course, we'll talk by text this Saturday. Go Hawks. Let's make sure Charlie Jones regrets his choice, if you will.
Shut him down.
Yep, exactly. Cool. I'll talk to you guys next week then.
All right. Thanks, Hank.
Okay. Thanks, Hank.
Folks, thank you for being here. We'll send you out with a little music. But in the meantime, be safe the rest of this week. Have a great weekend. And we will be back next week where we will report on the elections. And let's hope predictions that we made here tonight come true. Have a good one, folks. Good night, folks.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.